Are you ready to become a better version of yourself, to become a leader in your personal and professional life? Then welcome to the CJ Evolution Podcast, where we put a twist on traditional criminal justice professions and provide you with the tools you need to set yourself up for success in your career and for the future. Now, welcome your host, the CJ Evolutionist himself, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Episode 228 of CJ Evolution. That is Criminal Justice Evolution. Because CJ, the criminal justice field, is constantly evolving. It's constantly changing. Patrick here, host and creator of this growing podcast, growing because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you for tuning in, sharing it with your family and friends. We sure do appreciate it. Special thanks to all those first responders out there, brave men and women who serve us or serve this great country every day. We would not have this great country if it wasn't for you. A very difficult environment out there. I know. I'm in the field. But thank you for putting on the uniform, whatever you're doing in the CJ field, putting it on the line every day. Thank you so much. Keep up the great work. You have much support. You know, folks, all of us face roadblocks, adversity in our lives, and that's where professional coaching or people that will just listen to you and mentor you and help you get to that next level, that's where they come in and they can do so much for your personal and professional lives. I want you to head over to frameofmindcoaching.com and see what Kim Ades and her amazing team can do for you, both professionally and personally. If you can see their link on the cjevolution.com website, take a free assessment and they will help you get past those roadblocks that you have in your life. You're going to love Kim Ades. She's been on the show a couple times. Amazing woman. Check out her and her amazing team at frameofmindcoaching.com. All you first responders out there, don't give me this. I know you love coffee, or at least most of you do. If you love coffee, you're going to love the amazing products that Four Sigmatic produces. Most famously, their mushroom coffee. It is amazing, tastes great. No, it doesn't taste like mushrooms. You're going to love it. If you head over to cjevolution.com, you're going to see a link to Four Sigmatic. Check out their amazing products and get 15% off using the promo code CJEVO. On to the show. We talk so much in the podcast about the importance of good and effective leadership. My next guest travels all around the world, consults the military, consults criminal justice agencies on how to become better leaders, among many, many other important topics. So I hope you enjoy the next guest. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I am very excited, very pumped to have my next guest on. His name is Don Barden. He's a keynote speaker, professor, and a thought leader, and he's also a best-selling author. Don, are you there, sir?
Yes, Patrick. Thank you so much for having me. I just love your show, and I appreciate everything you're doing out there for everybody.
Well, I appreciate what you're doing out there for the military and law enforcement and the private sector. We're going to get into that. I know you're very, very busy. Again, thank you for being here, sir. I gave you a little bit of a bio. I don't know if I did you do justice when I just gave that quick bio of you. You want to add anything to that?
Oh, wow. Not really. No, I'm kidding. Of course. Do I want to talk about myself? Sure. Let's go. A little bit of a background. I spent 25 years on Wall Street or in Wall Street-based firms. Fortunately, I've always lived in Atlanta. I commuted to New York, Boston, London, all around the world on a pretty regular basis, and really got to see things, explore the world of business and people and culture, and had an opportunity to really continue my education in the same field and study behavioral economics and why people make the decisions they do. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of had this Forrest Gump type of career where I don't know why it happened, but you know, one stage led to another stage, and I was very fortunate to take unique paths along the way. And ultimately get to a stage in my life now where we can continue to teach. I put my professor hat on quite often, and got a few really good businesses here that do well on their own. But I get to work with the military and some first responders and business leaders all over the world now to learn what it's really like and to talk about openly, look, what's it like to be in the servant leader business? What's it like to do, you know, things where we're helping people's lives get better? From a protection point of view, from a liberation point of view, and from a leadership point of view. So I got a good time.
Yeah, and I love servant leadership, the topic of that. And that's getting more and more prevalent within law enforcement. I don't know if you know. You probably know that, Don. And really quick, we have a mutual friend, Dave Sanderson, who was on the podcast about a year and a half ago.
Yeah, love
but that. Oh, Dave's just a wonderful guy, and I'll have that linked up for all the listeners out there. And Dave Sanders,
Dave's famous
great
for all
guy.
The reasons, isn't he?
What's that?
Dave's famous for all the wrong reasons. Nobody wants to be like Dave. Dave was one of the last passengers off of US 1549, you know, the flight that landed in the Hudson. And but he became a hero that day. The things that he did and learned, and he continues to be a hero. It's just amazing.
Yeah, amazing, amazing man. Now, you have a tremendous background, but what was the catalyst for you, Don, that you said, okay, I want to go on this journey? It sounds like you were very successful in the private sector in corporate America. What was the catalyst? Did you always want to help people? Did you always want to try to solve people's problems? You know, give them good leadership advice. I mean, what was the main reason you were on, you got set on your path?
Oh, great question. I appreciate that. There's actually two things that happened. And I date myself. I'm a little bit older than you. 1985, I was in Germany. I was about 30 kilometers east of Dusseldorf. And that's when Germany is still split in two. It was very tense times. The communists, we just knew, were going to come down Panzer Pass. And I was in a military post near there. And I had gone into town. And the dollar was trading great against the Deutsche Mark. So this is way before the EU and, you know, everything. And it was great. It was Mark night, which meant at this bar, one mark got you one beer.
Well,
it's a great deal, especially when I looked at this coin I had in my pocket, and it was 25 marks. And I'm like, okay, I can give the bartender this coin, and he's going to give me back 25 beers. I love this place. You know, this is great. So anyway, I'm sitting around. Everybody's having a good time. I'm speaking to this gentleman, and we're conversing in Deutsch, German. And at the time, I was fairly fluent. But he went above my head. He started saying things, and I said, "Look, I'm sorry. I said I can't understand you anymore." And the guy just switched over to perfect English. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, if you'd done this half an hour ago, I wouldn't have a migraine now. But but here's what happened. He started asking me about Reagan's new tax plan. And how we were going to adjust on certain treaties. And it hit me with this wave of embarrassment that here I was on the other side of the world having a wonderful evening with people who were just great people, but they lived their life terrified.
Yeah.
The bad guys are going to ride over the hill at any time. And I'm sitting there with this guy, and he knows more about my country than I do. Wow. He knew more about what was happening in our economic system, in our government, in It embarrassed me in the greatest way, because I walked away from there and I said, this is never going to happen again.
Yeah.
And I threw myself into my education, graduate, postgraduate, doctorate, everything, with a commitment to never be embarrassed about that again, especially by somebody on the other side of the world, you know, probably never even set foot here. So here I am living in the greatest country in the world and know less about it than someone on the other side of the world. So that's what started it all, was I was going to figure this thing out.
Yeah. And that's really amazing, because you a lot of people would have said, oh, well, you know, it's no big deal. But you went that extra mile and said, you know, like you said, I'm not going to be in that position again, which I would probably too. I'm like, I got to know something more than.
They do. I know. It's very, very humbling, especially when you see the fear in their eyes.
Oh, exactly.
You know? A lot of people forget in the United States how safe and secure we are. You know, you've always got the evening news that wants to tell you something differently, but you can walk down the street here. We don't have a fear of, you know, somebody, you know, coming across our borders and just taking us back at any given time. So for somebody who lives a life of maybe sleeping with one eye open or their ears always to the ground, yet he knew enough about what was happening in the rest of the world.
Yeah.
That was the big change.
And you brought up a good point. It just made me think about it. I mean, I try to wake up every day, Don, and be thankful about things in my life, because I think it's so easy, at least I'm just speaking for myself, it's so easy to get caught up in everything and to complain about stuff. And then when I sit and really start thinking about it, you know, it's really humbling for me that I'm just grateful to live in the country I live in. I'm grateful to wake up and be breathing. And I think that's great. And I think that's part of good leadership too, is switching topics a little bit to the leadership realm. I think that's important. That's one thing that I think I don't see a lot anymore.
Yeah. In fact, it's really interesting you say that, and I appreciate what you just said. I try to do the same thing. I won't let my feet touch the ground in the morning out of bed until I have this mental state of gratitude. and appreciation for all that is and all that's to come. But after that, I had gone back and gone back to school, started my career working for these big financial firms. I worked my way up. You know, I started off as a junior nobody and got to be pretty good and, you know, increased my skill sets and started working on things. So ultimately, I was reporting to the CEO of one of the largest companies in the world. And he was actually paying for my doctorate, my education. And I was on the international team. Wow. And I had noticed that whenever they sent me around the world to do something, and I was very eager and very excited to go do whatever they asked me to do because it was fun and I was young and stupid, and I would just go do anything. So I would travel all over the world, and I started noticing that these people that I was meeting with, that were cutting deals with, they were the A-team. They were the best and the brightest of the culture that we were working with because we were doing big deals. And I started noticing that these people all seemed to be similar. That at one point I even said, you know what, if you take away culture and language, I swear, I don't care where I am, Tokyo, Mexico City, Rome, Prague, Moscow, I realized I was talking to the same person. Yet this was before LinkedIn, before Facebook, we just had gotten cell phones and we were discouraged from using them. So there was no connectivity whatsoever like there is now. Yet I felt this deja vu every time I went to a country and worked with these great leaders. Mm-hmm. And so I went back and I requested and got permission to study that and to figure out what it is that makes these great leaders who they are, either in business, sales, the criminal justice system, like what you study, all these things. I want to know what it was that made these elite people so special. Mm-hmm. And good news is we figured it out, but to wrap it around to what you just said, the number one thing was this constant state of gratitude.
Yeah.
That they operated with an expression internally and externally that made it so amazing that every conversation, every email, every voicemail, every communication, every greeting on the street began with an expression of appreciation for the person they were with, yeah. Person, the team, or whatever. And what we learned is not only was that something that they did, it actually created a biological response, a chemical response inside your brain that when gratitude is expressed and it's received, a bonding occurs. Mm-hmm. And this bond is so great, the only thing that can break it is lack of trust. So that's why I'm so excited about when you said gratitude. Great leaders begin not only their day, they begin every action with an expression of gratitude that's real and sincere. And because of that, people are bonded to them, and they will, frankly, follow them wherever they need to go.
And I believe too that you know what you put out there is what you're going to get back. So if you're ungrateful, and not to make it sound like nobody has a bad day, I get that.
Yes.
But if you are constantly in this negative state and you're constantly, you know, just ungrateful, that's what the universe is going to get back to you.
Right, yeah, all day long. In fact, I joked with someone the other day, the great philosopher Sir Paul McCartney of the Beatles. you know, the very last song of the very last album, the very last line said that the love you have is equal to the love you make.
Yeah,
and I think that's so beautiful because you're right. People will respond. The energy will respond to what you give. And if you give gratitude, then you'll receive gratitude. And that bonding allows you to do some really fascinating, great things together. Yeah.
Now, I want to talk about your work a little bit, Don, with the military. We talked off the air. Thank you. First of all, thank you for working with the military and first responders. When you go in there and talk to the military and first responders, I mean, what do you talk about? I imagine it's leadership and servant leadership, which we can talk about. What's the main premise behind it? I guess, is it different or is it pretty much the same message with, you know, with the military and law enforcement?
Sure. Well, the message is usually rooted in the same thing, that it's about leading others with a servant's heart, mm-hmm. no matter what you're doing. But you do have a mission. And, of course, everyone can have a different mission at the time, whether it's a traffic ticket or helping someone out of a burning building or, you know, a military situation where it's, you know, to make a mess of things and destroy things and liberate the oppressed. But everybody ultimately gets back around to the same thing, and it's you're doing something, you have an action to do something that allows you to take care of other people and to serve other people. So when we're working with the military and first responders, it's about, hey, let's keep that in mind. The military do a lot with the Rangers, love those guys. And
cool.
I know your Ranger tab. Yeah, you had your Ranger tab, so you know, Rangers lead the way. But you know, they're the greatest fighting force in history, and everybody talks about what their first job is and not what about their second job is. And their first job is to kill and destroy. Mm-hmm. It is to go into an area and absolute unleash hell, mm-hmm, in a way that accomplishes a mission. But very few people want to talk about the mission. And the mission might be a specific tactical thing, but every mission is wrapped around the term of liberate oppresso, which means to liberate the oppressed. Mm-hmm. That they do their thing. They make action. They cause, you know, things to be disrupted in order to liberate the oppressed, to free people, and to give them back their land, give them back their life, give them back their culture. And as you know, all we ask in return is a place to bury our dead.
Yeah.
So we go into places to liberate. Yeah. And you know, historically, you know, yeah, we've screwed up a few things, but we've gotten to a good place, especially over the past 100 or so years, where this country can stand tall. But we liberate the oppressed in order to serve them and hopefully teach them. Yeah. But when you get caught into the testosterone of it all, you know, sometimes you got to step back and think, wait a minute. Even in the worst of times, I've got to express gratitude. Even in the worst of times, I've got to clearly educate people. Even in the worst of times, I've got to focus on making someone's life easier. Mm-hmm. So they all come back to the same.
Now, when you go into organizations, what are some of the challenges? You're a leadership expert, Don, whether it's military, law enforcement, or other first responders out there. What are some of the challenges you see in I mean, every organization has their own challenges. I get that. But what are some of the reoccurring themes that you see with the organizations you go into?
Sure. Most of them have a blind spot. Yeah. And blind spot is created by usually a voluntary situation, maybe subconsciously, but it's voluntarily attained, where they just don't want to address a situation. They just don't want to think about the obvious. They think that plowing ahead toward whatever mission it is, whether it be a sales goal, a rollout of a new product, expansion of a police force or whatever, they get blind spots and they don't take a step back to give themselves what we call the honest assessment. And an honest assessment is when you just sit there and you become vulnerable and you say, look, I just need to know, is there a weakness? Is there a crack? Is there something that we just flat out forgot? What do we need to know in order to get back on track and maximize our full potential here? And a lot of times leadership gets moving so fast that the people below them will do anything they can to keep up with them and to earn their, you know, thumbs up, earn their, you know, attaboys. Mm-hmm. And they just let things drop and let them slide. And ultimately, that's what always comes back to bite them on the tail.
Yeah.
So the common thing we like to look at first is, what is your blind spot?
Yeah.
And in most cases, I'll just kind of jump to it, it's you've got great, awesome people in all the wrong jobs. So that's really where it begins, is do you have the right person in the right job? Not just from a skills and training perspective, but from a wiring and mindset perspective.
Yeah.
And then we can get into the mindset.
Yeah, that's a very good point, because I've been in situations or seen people in organizations that are perfectly content. They're very good in their current positions, but sometimes management, leadership of an organization, you know, kind of scoffs at that, and they want that person to keep going up when that person is content in their current job. I mean, that's not a good example, but that's the one thing I've just thought about.
They're
good in that job, so don't kind of come down on them. Maybe that's not a good word, but you know, kind of say, well, why aren't you going up the chain if they're content and they're doing a good job in their current role?
Yeah, well, Peters wrote about that in, I think, 1969, the Peter Principle.
Yeah, exactly.
He said everyone given enough upper mobility will ultimately rise to the level of their incompetence.
Yeah.
In other words, we'll keep promoting you and promoting you and promoting you until it's something you don't want to do, you're not trained to do, but hey, I guess you're deserved a promotion. And you take someone who's perfectly happy and content and very, very good at what they're doing. They're actually performing at their best within their unique ability. And then you just, oh, what the heck, give them a promotion and have them do something else. And then everything starts to fall apart.
Yeah.
That's a blind spot. That's something where an honest assessment comes in handy.
Yeah. Now, Don, what do you think? I mean, there's two camps out there, and I'm sure you've heard what I'm about to ask you. What's your opinion about this? Are leaders born, or can they be created? Can leadership be taught?
Leadership is taught. There's no such thing as a born leader. Okay. No. I that's what I believe. Now, I believe you might have some traits that make you accelerate and get there quicker, But at the end of the day, no. Leadership is just like anything else. Great policemen are not born. Great firemen are not born. Great military people are not born. They learn through unique events that happen in their life based on a unique path that they chose, career-wise, I guess, and then the type of training that they get.
Yeah.
And then if all those things come together, then that's what it is. Yeah. I mean, very rarely, I mean, you might hear some Walt Disney show sometime where they find some guy who happens to be the world's fastest person, yet he's never put on running shoes, he's never run, he's never done anything. Well, go put him against, you know, Usain Bolt and see what happens. So he might be fast, but he's not trained to be fast.
Yeah.
And I think leadership's the same way.
And I believe, I'd love to hear your, and I think I know the answer to this, I believe that everyone has the ability to become a leader if they surround themselves with the right people in their life.
Yes. Yeah.
How important are mentors, Don?
Oh, there's no scale for that. There's not even an important thing. It's a must.
Yeah, yeah.
Because mentors do a couple things. Mentors keep you in the guardrails. You know, they keep you going on a path without getting you off path. But a real mentor is there to transfer knowledge, information, experience to you faster than what you can go bumble through it and learn on your own. So mentors and people who transfer knowledge and help you get there are helping you get there faster. It's just like what happens every day if you had to wake up and learn how to make fire. Yeah, good luck with that. But hey, we figured that out a long time ago, so let's pass it along.
Yeah.
Now, that sounds kind of silly, but the same thing happens in leadership. You know, if you can train someone and help them and pass along that knowledge, then they're going to be better than you. And they're ultimately, or they have the opportunity to be better than you and to fulfill a potential that was greater than what they would have if they didn't. So mentorships are not just, they're a must have. And so is training.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess, is the thing. Imagine getting on an airplane tomorrow to fly somewhere, and the pilot come on and say, "Hey, you know, they cut our budgets for our mechanics about 5 years ago, and we haven't trained a single mechanic in 5 years, and we're so proud of that. But I'm sure they remember how to do everything. Sit back, relax. We'll have you in Phoenix in 3 hours." You know, no, I want the best, most trained individual there is doing everything, and that everything applies to leadership as well. So. It's not important. It's a must do.
And I love what you said earlier about mindset, because I'm a huge, advocate of you just have to have that mindset. I mean, can you talk about the leadership mindset series that sure. you have?
Yeah, sure. When we work with leaders, it really is it's a twofold thing. You might be a great leader or a good leader or even an awesome leader. I don't know. But you're a leader because maybe you just paid your dues and you finally got there and it's your turn. Or it's because you broke through some entrepreneurial barrier, or in like the criminal justice system, let's say first responders, law enforcement, police, whatever, part of the alphabet system, you're in. It's a career that you have, which is granted authority. So you can get into a leadership position in a bunch of different ways, but what are you going to do when you're there? And it ultimately comes down to your mindset and how you approach every situation. And when we did the study going back 20 years now, we found that the mindset was what really did separate that elite, let's say 1% of the leadership and performers out there from everybody else. And it wasn't a gradual thing either. I always tell people the difference between the 1% of the top performers out there and the second ring down, the 2%ers, is about the size of a Grand Canyon. Mm-hmm. It is gigantic, because that understanding that it's about your mindset, and ultimately, Patrick, is the mindset of leading with your heart and not with your head.
Exactly.
It's about putting other people before yourself. And I know some people say that's cliche and servant leadership. What does that mean? It means everything. Because when we studied these elite leaders out there and really got into their minds, their occupation became what we call the "oh yeah" part of the conversation. Like when we say, "Hey, what do you do for a living?" or "what gets you, really pumped up in the morning?" They say things like, "I get up every day and I run to work to serve my team and to serve the people that are around me and to serve our customers or our people and to do this. And my heart's just full of joy. I'm a police officer. Or, oh, yeah, I'm a baker. Or, oh, yeah, I own the tire store down there." So their description of their own self came around that mindset. Their career, their actions was secondary.
Yeah, and I love what you said about leading with the heart. There's a great book out there called The Leadership Challenge.
Sure.
That I've read, that one of the chapters is devoted to leading with the heart. Now, I agree with you. I know some people listening are going, what the hell are these guys talking about? But it truly is. Now, I'm a realist too. I mean, it's not going to the sunshine and roses every day. We get that.
Yep.
But like you said, as long as you're leading from the heart, I mean, how can you go wrong?
Right. That's exactly right. And you're putting other people before yourself. And the memory of that is what ultimately what we call a legacy, because what we found in the science of the decision-making process, especially in leadership, is that 85% of all decisions are based on emotion, no matter what you do. 15% are justified by the facts of the situation. And from a leadership point of view, when you're presenting something to someone to follow you, to do something, either a command or non-command position, 10 minutes after they're done, they can only remember 6% of what you said to them. Mm-hmm. They can remember 100% about how they felt about you forever. So if you have the mindset of leading with your heart, of serving other people, people are going to remember that this person was here and he was always here for me, that he put everyone else before himself. He was there to serve. He was a great leader because he cared about other people. Now, are they going to be able to tell you in 20 years what you said that day? No. But they're going to tell you what your heart was about and how they chose to follow you. Now, you got to have the skills. You can't go out there and say, hey, he's a great leader. Let's go run into that fire. And yet you've never trained on fire. You know, no, you got to be good. But to lead is a different level, and that comes from the heart.
Well, and it comes with, you have to have trust too.
Yeah.
You know, if people trust you, they'll go off a cliff with you. If people don't trust you, they don't trust you, they're not going to do anything.
Oh, 100%. That goes back to the gratitude thing. You know, if someone feels your gratitude, that expression of appreciation, they are 100% bonded to you, and nothing's going to separate that except for the lack of trust.
Yeah.
And it could be caused because they might realize that you weren't as skilled as they thought you were, or it could be that you lied to them or misled them. But whatever causes that trust to break kind of ripples down the system. Yeah. So trust is everything.
Yeah, so important. Now, I know you're a best-selling author, Don. I want you to talk about your book that I'm going to order. It's called The Perfect Plan.
Oh, thank you. I'll send you a copy. Don't order one. The Perfect Plan, thank you. I appreciate it. It's been out for a little over 10 years now. It's on its third edition, which I'm really excited about. But it's basically the reader version of my doctoral work around, you know, these elite leaders and what they did differently and how they express things. And it literally goes through the formula of it, but hopefully in a way that everybody can understand in a very narrative sort of a sense. It explains the science behind it too. So I always tell people, I don't ever want to be a motivational speaker, but I love when we talk if you can be inspired. Mm-hmm. And because motivation burns out, but inspiration goes on forever. So the book is meant to be an inspiration of you learning what these great leaders do and how they do it differently. It's got a lot of good examples in it, but it literally goes through the formula. It goes through a concept of respect, what respect is all about, and understanding that when you're trying to get something done, for example, my favorite part of the book is when we talk about the most misquoted thing in history is the golden rule. Mm-hmm. And most people learn that in fifth grade or when they're 5 years old, you know, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense. We get it. It means be nice because you want other people to be nice to you. We get it. But that's not really how it was written. The original transcription of that going back thousands of years is basically do unto others as they would have you do unto them. In other words, treat people the way they want to be treated, not the way you want to be treated, because that's terribly selfish. Yeah. So from a leadership point of view, if you can respect people and treat them the way they want to be treated in order to help you jointly get to the mission, to the goal, what it is you're trying to accomplish, then everything changes. So there's all types of things about that in the book, but it ultimately wraps up in the formula of how these elite leaders express themselves and why. And the big reveal is in the mindset of what they're really trying to accomplish.
Yeah. So for the listener out there, Don, that wants to do some immediate action steps, what are some quick tips that you can give them?
I guess, you know, back to your first word, go back to gratitude. You know, how grateful are you really? Look at yourself and do an honest assessment and say, you know, am I just some grumpy guy going through the day? Am I a taskmaster? Am I just checking boxes? Or am I truly grateful for this? And am I expressing it? And how am I expressing it? Am I trying to make somebody's life easier? So always tell people to start there, because if you don't have that down, then nothing else is going to come as easy or as quick as you do. So you get that mindset down first, and you'll start to see things, like I said, not through rose-colored glasses, but you'll see things differently. And the second thing I always tell people is it's not a light switch. You can't just say, okay, I'm going to go out there and be grateful, and I'm going to be a great leader. Probably not. You know, it's going to take some time, just like doing anything. It's like working out, exercising, whatever. So Give yourself some time, have a commitment, have some courage, and realize ultimately that confidence in leadership isn't going to come till the very, very end.
Yeah.
Because confidence is a byproduct. And you know, you're 82nd Airborne, right?
Yes.
Always, when I work with those guys who jump out of perfectly good airplanes, we go, no. You know, they'll sit there and, you know, if you're not as scared on your 130th jump as you were on your first jump, something's wrong with you.
Exactly.
What you do is you, Dan Sullivan says, number one thing you do in leadership or anything is you make a commitment. I'm going to do this. Number two is you have the courage to do it. Number three is you seek the capabilities, the training, the understanding, the team, whatever it is to do it. And then after you've made a commitment, been courageous, and sought the capabilities, then you're allowed to be confident.
Yeah.
But confidence is a byproduct. So, like I said, it's not a light switch. It's going to take some time.
And like you said, it's going to take some time. And I think one of those, Don, maybe I'm wrong, but it might be some reassessment of who you're surrounding yourself with.
Oh, 100%.
You might have to get rid of some people. And I don't mean that in a, you know, violent way. I just mean you might have to disassociate yourself.
Yeah, don't use cement blocks.
Yeah, exactly.
No, you're 100% right. We call that multiplication by subtraction.
Yeah.
Your life will multiply. Your business, your team, your group will multiply sometimes because you subtracted things from it. And whether that's you set somebody free because they're in the wrong job, and I say that very specifically, sometimes leaders don't want to cut somebody off because they feel sorry for them or whatever, or we'll give them one more chance. Well, the reality is they're probably in the wrong job and they're being tortured. Mm-hmm. You know, set them free to go find what's right for them so they can live up to their full God-given potential. So by subtracting those things, by saying, look, you know, I'm just rethinking the people that are around me, then what will happen is you will multiply your mission for yourself and your team. And, of course, some of them are just toxic people. You know, you don't need that. Get rid of them.
Yeah, such great advice. Now, Don, if people want to reach out to you, sir, where can they find you? I imagine you're everywhere.
Yeah, I'm everywhere, but you can send me an email. That's the best way to do it. And I do answer all my emails. I talk to, you know, gosh, I don't know how many people per day because I love serving people and I love doing whatever I can to help out. But it's don@dwbarden.com. That's dwbarden.com. Or you go to donwbarden.com and I'm there.
Well, Don Barden, thank you so much, sir. I know you're very busy. We'll have all your social media and your book and your Leadership Mindset series linked up in the show notes. Thank you so much, sir, for what you're doing out there. Much success to you in the future, and thank you for coming on. I'd love to have you back on in the future. I'd love to talk to you more and pick your brain about some other things.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Patrick. Hey, let me do one thing. Let me say, because I know the vast majority of your listeners are first responders.
Yes.
I just want to say thank you for doing what you do. I know I've been out there with these folks, these men and women who are brave and go out there every day and do things. And my heart really goes out to them. So I just want them to know how much I appreciate them. And one thing I've always learned, I never go up to military people and say thank you for serving, for your service, because it's so cliche then. And then it isolates the rest of the people in the world.
Yeah.
And the military guys will tell you, I hope you know this from your service, you're doing your job because you love your country, you love your people, and you're serving others. But so is every kindergarten teacher, so is every banker, so is every police officer, so is every fireman. So everyone out there serves this country in their own way. And to me, the first responder world, the criminal justice world, does such a great job because there are people who keep us alive, keep us free, and then there's people who are standing there every day making it happen, as well as we dwell among ourselves. And that's those folks in your world. So thank you to all of you guys out there, men and women. And thank you, Patrick, for your show and what you're doing to continue to help make them better and share the word.
Well, thank you so much, sir. And yes, I'd love to have you back on. I know you're a busy man, but I'd love to have you back on in the future.
Hey, let's do it. I'm here for you.
All right, Don, you take care.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.